From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. In a win for Alaska tribes, the Biden administration has canceled the sale of a National Archives building in Seattle, citing a lack of tribal consultation. Alaska Native and Pacific Northwest tribes opposed the sale when it was revealed during the Trump administration. They said it would displace documents and artifacts important to their heritage. The plan was to rehome them in other archives facilities in Missouri and California. The acting director of the Office of Management and Budget wrote a letter today saying that she's withdrawing approval for the sale of the archives facility on Sandpoint Way. She said the process that led to the decision to sell the building did not comply with the Biden administration's commitment to consult with tribes on issues that are important to them. The Alaska collection had already been displaced once. In 2014, the National Archives closed its Anchorage branch and moved almost everything to Seattle. And over a year after a Washington state-based conservation group filed suit in federal court to halt commercial fishing for king salmon in Alaska, the state of Alaska has decided to intervene in the case. In March, a judge in the U.S. District Court of Western Washington ruled that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game had standing in a lawsuit brought by the Wild Fish Conservancy against the National Marine Fisheries Service. The suit is intended to protect an endangered population of killer whales in Puget Sound. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The news that the state of Alaska has thrown its weight behind the defense in the lawsuit comes as a relief to Amy Doherty, executive director of the Alaska Trollers Association.
It's just great to have them on our team.
Trolling is one of the most lucrative fisheries in southeast Alaska, and king salmon are trolling's most valuable product. The suit brought by the Duval, Washington-based Wild Fish Conservancy, if it succeeds, would be a serious blow to the salmon industry in the region, which, among all species, produces $800 million in total output and supports over 6,000 jobs, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. In a news release, ADF&G Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang views the lawsuit almost as an affront to the department's dedication to careful management. He writes, "Sustainable management of our fisheries was one of the primary drivers behind statehood. I don't take unjustified accusations and threats to state management of our resources lightly." Vincent Lang went on to write, "We have a responsibility to look out for our fisheries and the citizens of Alaska that rely on them." The Wild Fish Conservancy filed suit against the National Marine Fisheries Service and filed a request for a preliminary injunction to halt the commercial fishery in Alaska in March of 2020. At the time, the estimated population of southern resident killer whales had dropped to about 70 individuals. The Wild Fish Conservancy blames some of the decline on the decrease in available king salmon due to the interception of kings by commercial trollers in southeast Alaska. Faced with an injunction that could have blocked the 2020 season, the Alaska Trollers Association raised money and hired lawyers to intervene on behalf of the National Marine Fisheries Service. ATA Director Doherty wishes the state had come on board back then.
It's a lot for this small organization to involve themselves in a major lawsuit. And had we seen them rallying to involve themselves, there's a fair chance that we maybe wouldn't have.
Reached for comment by KCAW, Rick Green, Special Assistant to the Commissioner for ADF&G, said that the department was waiting to see how the federal judge ruled on the Conservancy's request for a preliminary injunction before deciding to intervene. U.S. Magistrate Judge Michelle Peterson denied the injunction in June of 2020. As the case moves forward, it's now the Wild Fish Conservancy versus the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Alaska Trollers Association, and the state of Alaska. The lineup in court, however, will look different. The trollers' lead counsel, Thane Teenson, something of a legend in Pacific Northwest fisheries law, died of a heart attack in January of this year. "It's very unfortunate," said Amy Doherty. "Thane had a great, long-standing reputation in this area of fisheries." The ATA has since retained Douglas Stedding with Northwest Resource Law in Seattle as its lead counsel. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
In other news, a new daily airline connection between Juneau and Petersburg started up on Monday. Alaska Seaplanes is flying its 9-passenger planes twice a day into James A. Johnson Airport and held a ribbon-cutting ceremony there to mark the start of the service. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
Shortly after the first flight landed, staff and community members crowded into the Alaska Seaplanes office for cake and a ribbon cutting. The office is in the former site of Pacific Wings, which closed last year. Alaska Seaplanes offers commuter service from its hub in Juneau to communities around Southeast, along with Whitehorse and the Yukon. Company co-owner Mike Stedman noted his family's long ties to Petersburg.
It's real special, like I say, for us to start service here in Petersburg and help connect, you know, the other communities of Southeast here. And you know, we've had a lot of people ask us over the years, when are we going to start going to Petersburg, when are we going to start going to Wrangell, and, you know, so here we are, you know, first day, first flight into Petersburg, and it's a real nice moment for us, so I really appreciate you guys showing up here.
His cousin and Sitka Republican State Senator Bert Stedman was on the inaugural flight from the capital city. He said the new connection will help in a region that's felt the state's budget crunch for ferries and airports.
We keep a pretty good eye on the airport funding and the amount of people coming and going in all our airports. So it's very nice to see additional trips with seaplanes into Petersburg. That all counts for people coming in and out and how we allocate dollars around airports so that it doesn't all end up north. It's going to make it a real nice enhancement to get from Petersburg to Juneau and back for more commerce and then those that have family in Juneau. Or like myself in Sitka, where my sister could make it easier to come over and see our mom in the Pioneer home, which is really difficult.
Stedman also noted the expansion of the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's hospital in Sitka, where Native health patients from around the region receive their services. This twice-a-day link to Juneau will make for a quicker connection between Petersburg and Sitka compared to a longer layover required on Alaska Airlines. Petersburg also has that twice-a-day jet service from the larger airline as well. And other companies have tried the daily connection from Petersburg to Juneau but haven't seen that passenger demand. Alaska Seaplanes also flies out of Juneau to Cake, Klawock, Angoon, Hoonah, Tenneke, Haines, Skagway, Pelican, and Elfin Cove. Alaska Seaplanes' first Petersburg flight Monday was on a Pilatus PC-12 airplane. They'll also be using Cessna Caravans. Those can all carry up to 9 passengers. Pilot John Cahill said it wasn't his first time landing in Petersburg.
I've been here a couple of times doing training. And not too challenging. It actually reminds me a lot of Juneau, just with the terrain and stuff. And you just got to keep track of all of what's going on and get to the runway safely.
Cool. Those flights go from Juneau to Petersburg and back twice a day, landing in Petersburg around 9:15 in the morning and 5:15 in the evening, and departing about 15 minutes later. Petersburg still has local travel mandates in place for screening and COVID-19 testing. The Emergency Operations Center is looking into what it can do for incoming passengers from this new service. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
A bill advancing in the legislature would rename a state council on Alaska Native Languages and expand its membership. The bill would rename the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council as the Council for Alaska Native Languages. Members of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs heard from bill supporters yesterday.
My name is Rene Lance Twitchell.
Twitchell is a council member and Tlingit scholar. He says the legislature should do all that it can to support the 21 Alaska Native languages that are spoken today.
By my estimations and the estimations of language experts across the state, over half of them may have fewer than 10 speakers remaining. And we're only talking about incremental change, or only towing a line that does keep us in a death spiral.
Twitchell says the word preservation should be taken out of the council's name since it is trying to revitalize languages, not preserve them. The bill would also add 2 members to the council, expanding it from 5 to 7 members. Supporters say this would help the council represent more of the diversity of Alaska Native languages. Twitchell says cultural genocide led to the language's decline.
What kind of humans are we if we stand upon a foundation of racism and allow systems of communication that are tens of thousands of years old to be lost?
The committee voted to advance the bill to the House Finance Committee. And a judge has ordered the Alaska Department of Corrections to allow in-person visitation between lawyers and their clients in jail, regardless of an inmate's COVID-19 vaccination status. For more on this story, go to ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.